Hey, everybody. Aaron here to announce something interesting on the old Game of Thrones feed. We are going to be beginning our summer rewatch of Season 3 of Game of Thrones next week. I'm not sure what day these pods are going to drop normally. I'm suspecting like a Wednesday or Thursday instead of our usual like Tuesday. Because our Tuesday slot's going to be filled with Sharp Objects, the miniseries coming out also this weekend on HBO. But we're pretty excited because this is the last season we don't have coverage for in the archive, Season 3. I'd covered the other previous seasons, 1 through 3 with Mad Brew, and then we stopped that podcast, and then Jim joined me from Season 4 on. So this will be kind of fun to catch up on that. Also should mention that Jim's not here because he's on vacation, so I'm kind of doing this solo. We're going to kick things off. We just got back from Texas a month or so ago at the Dallas-based Con of Thrones. And we did a live podcast in front of an audience there. And we talked about just some fun topics because, you know, we're a ways away from a new book coming out. And we're a ways away from the season 8 coming out. Probably sometime in 2019. So we didn't have a lot of like, you know, urgent stuff, but we had some fun topics. One of the topics is the fact that I did like a soft plug on this book that I'm writing with a religious scholar by the name of Anthony Ladon, about the religions of Westeros and Essos. And in fact, the entire quote unquote world of ice and fire. We're going to be, it's kind of a fun tongue-in-cheek examination of the religions and their real-life counterparts and inspirations religiously and culturally that Martin is kind of drawing on. And we use those to make interesting connections about characters that maybe you hadn't thought about before. And also we use it to make kind of predictions about where the plot is going to go. And I think it's interesting. It's fun. The research is real. And the scholarship is real, but we also have a lot of fun with it. If you want to check out that process, we're doing a Kickstarter on it right now to raise money for professionally typesetting and copy editing and hiring illustrators. If you go to book.baldmove.com, you can see how you can help us get that accomplished. There's not a lot of content. That's kind of the theme of the Kickstarter. There's not a lot of new Game of Thrones content being produced. We're trying to step in and fill that gap because we're going kind of stir crazy without any new information, just like everybody else is. So we're doing our part. Book.baldmove.com if you want to check out the Kickstarter. We are still 30-some days away from the Kickstarter being completed, and we're very near our goal. We're going to start talking about announcing stretch goals and whatnot, but check it out. One of the levels is you can essentially get 20% off of the eventual ebook that's going to be coming out this November. I guess that's important to talk about too. But anyway, I just want to mention book.baldmove.com if you want to check out me and Anthony's work on that. Without further ado, I want to get into the live podcast we recorded and just remind everybody that we're going to be starting next week with episode 1 of season 3. If you want to get on the summer rewatch with us, please send feedback to GameofThrones@baldmove.com. As always, we'll also have a thread episode on our forums on forums.baldmove.com each week. If you'd like to send your feedback there too for consideration, we'll see. I don't think we've ever done one just kind of like in the middle of the year. We've always released our rewatch coverage right after a season completes. So this will be an interesting experiment, see how many people are kind of interested in rewatching Game of Thrones with us. But mostly, you know, we just want to complete our coverage. We want to have full coverage of Game of Thrones in our archives, and we're excited to get that done. So without further ado, here is our preview. We'll be back next week for Season 3, Episode 1, entitled Valar Dohaeris. And we're excited. Again, GameofThrones.baldmove.com if you want to follow along with that. I haven't done this in a while. It's always been my like fantasy to get you like booed on a large stage, so I appreciate the applause. Can I get boo? That boo! Like, come on, Aaron, let it out! Let it out! Martin's never finishing the books. Season 8's gonna suck. Come on! That's awesome. That's awesome. I want one day 60,000 people. I want to be at like
Maybe I have to rush this. I have to rush a large sporting event because we're never going to get 60,000 people to come out and see us.
Just times 1,000, and we're good.
This is weird. I'm used to doing a podcast like across the table from you.
Yeah, I'm happy. I don't have to look
at you. There's a giant Matt Damon behind you.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's like very odd. Very odd. Are you going to do like the official? Are you going to kick this thing off?
I'm going to kick it off. Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Con of Thrones. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we got a look. We have a couple of games that we're going to play tonight. We want to talk about the con. We want to talk about a lot of stuff. Hopefully get maybe some Q&A later.
Yeah.
The end.
There's a microphone there.
If there's
some
a microphone.
Point.
Yeah, there it is.
We're going to run for a little bit like we do. Is everybody having a good con?
Yeah.
I thought maybe we could talk about some Con of Thrones experiences.
Okay. You want to start off?
Yeah. I hit the expo floor, and I was immediately accosted by this guy that's selling genuine absinthe. Have you seen that?
Okay.
And I bought two. It's got like wormwood and a whole bunch of other shit in it, and it's in like a little sock thing, and you steep it in your favorite. It's not steeping. He corrected me because that implies heat. You just soak it in the spirit of your choice, and in between 5 and 35 days, depending on how strong you want, you have absinthe. Now, I've never had real absinthe because I guess that's, like, illegal. But I'm thinking that I'm going to make this in, like, 35 days of an experiment. Jim and I are going to drink some on lunch with Jim and Aaron.
And 35 minutes into brewing it, you're going to be rested. Because you've just admitted to it.
Yeah, and this will... There's only, like, what? 75, 80 people here? That's, like...
60,000.
Yeah, 60,000. I don't know. If we release it on the... Like, that's... Are we going to get a copy of this file? Will it actually... Is it going to escape this room?
We did last year.
Shit,
so, yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't confess to that. I mean, the guy's selling it, right? You can probably,
it's
legal to sell wormwood.
As
soon as you put in alcohol, it's super illegal.
Like weed.
Yeah, yeah. Your weed's fine as long as you keep it out of alcohol. That's check local laws. Not sure how they roll in Texas. I thought that was cool. Did you see?
Another vendor that I liked was the coin vendor. I can't remember their name. Anybody got that?
They were passing out these weird, like, super secret black sealed envelopes that you could turn in for, like, a small coin at their booth.
Yeah, they give you a little, like, coin purse with a couple coins in it, and I thought that was really cool. They do all their custom engraving. They have, like, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and Game of Thrones, obviously. Just all these different themed coins I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'd also talked to that guy who's a broken shoulder armory or broken shoulder smithing. I think I finally found someone who's going to make my Bolton brooch that I've been wanting to complete my Roose Bolton costume. He said he could do a custom casting out of copper for me. So I finally, that's a thing I need to complete my costume, the flayed man brooch that like pins Roose's crisscrossy belt things onto his chest. I'm pretty excited about that. Have you enjoyed the panels you've been on?
The ones I've been on? Yeah, sure.
Have you seen any? Because I don't think I've seen a panel that I haven't been on because I've been...
Oh, I caught a couple. I caught the opening ceremony, which was a lot of fun. They played some games. And then I caught another game panel, which was the Family Feud. That one was a lot of fun. They had some of the actors from Game of Thrones and some staff members up on stage, and they played a round of Family Feud, and I thought it was fun. But yeah, I haven't caught many other panels.
Yeah, it's tough when you're working. Also, there's been really a lot of cool costumes. I just saw outside, there's a guy dressed as the wall.
Yeah, I saw that.
And there's a lot of dragons running around. There's one right there in the front row. He needs to stay the hell away from them, especially if they've been ice magicked.
I saw the, what is it?
Pre-ice
dragon.
Your lovely shade of yellow. I don't think the ice would take well.
There was one of like the siren, is that right, on top of the marine...
The harpy?
Pyramid, the harpy, yes.
She's got several sons running around, too.
Yeah, I saw him. That's pretty cool.
I thought that was neat. I got, the guy who plays young Willis, who you might know better as young Hodor, Sam. I don't know if you saw it last night, but he was wearing a mocap dragon costume, where he had, like, essentially, like, a black sock on with those, like, ping pong balls all over him and, like, a dragon head and, like, sticks for his wings. I thought that was cool.
And that was at the Family Feud panel. That was really funny.
That was a lot of fun. But, yeah, it's been cool.
I like your nickname for the Jon Snow that's been running around.
I think it's his nickname.
That's his nickname?
Con Snow?
It's too good. I love it.
Yeah, it's very, very funny. Do we want to get into our other topics, or do you have anything else you want to shout out about the con?
No, I'm good. I think we should start off with, what, Lord of Lightning Round?
Do you want to do that, or do you want to save that for... Let's do the quips. Let's do the quips up front.
Okay, spoiler alert. Lord of Lightning Round is coming.
Yeah. So we do this thing for our club. It's called Quit Your Pitching, where we use this random generator to generate random show titles, and then we take turns like pitching what those shows would be about, and we cast it and all that. We thought it'd be fun to play a Con of Thrones edition where we pitch rejected ideas for Game of Thrones spinoffs for HBO. I'll start off. The Gendry CrossFit Show. So this is going to be Gendry. It's a half-hour motivational daily thing. It's in the morning. He's going to lead you through some cardio or some rowing. He's when he gets you warmed up. He's going to do
some hammering.
He's got this. You're those big sledgehammers on the tires. You're going to be definitely doing a lot of that. You're going to be doing a lot of cross-country running, as he showed off. And it's just get Westeros fit. Get jacked like Gendry. That'll be the trademark. The break ad's going to, you're going to see on all the t-shirts, get jacked like Gendry. That's one. Rejected by HBO. I don't know why.
Next one up is Hodoring with Hodor.
So this is a talk show like between, what is it?
It's like the soup, you know?
It was like Between Two Palms with, it's going to be Between Two Weirwoods. And it's going to be a Hodor will have a different ice and fire character on each week, and he'll lead an interview, and he'll be Hodor, 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 Hodor.
What were you thinking in the famous scene where you had to hold the door?
Hodor, Hodor. He also, like, there'll be the Hodoring with Hodor after hours, or like it's ASMR, where he just Hodor, 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 Hodor. Yeah, it's going to be like that. Again, rejected by HBO. Fighting around Planetos with Sandor Clegane. So this is a meta take on, what was that, the South Park skit?
Fighting around the world. Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. Yeah.
Going around Tugga.
So it'll be Sandor literally coming into every port and fighting with the town's inhabitants. He's going to be, I've heard there's a bunch of right cunts in the free cities. We're here at Braavos. They say they've got the best swords. And he's just, that's not a great Sandor. I didn't promise good impressions.
I am much better Crow.
I promised bad pitches that would be rejected by HBO. And he's going to, he's going to take on the faceless men. He's going to go down, the slavers of Meereen are going to try to capture him. And he's going to fight his way out of that. He's going to take on the entire Dothraki horde. Just use a lot of like gendered insults, and he's going to disembowel a lot of people, and that also was rejected by HBO. That one had legs. I really fought for that one.
Yeah, I thought so too. This next one, though, I feel is really good. Arya the List, where it's essentially, I think it would break into some of these other shows as like a news bulletin. Arya has added another name to her list, this time herself, Arya Stark.
The dude that cut her off in line for Starbucks. She starts off with Cersei, Illyn Payne, the Hound, but then it gets progressively more petty. The person that was...
Because it has to, right?
The person
where
was unwrapped...
the big bads?
They brought their, like, candy from home, and it's all individually wrapped to the movie theater, and they're, like, in the back row, and they just keep crinkling. She's on the list. On the list. Arya is not taking any more of this guff.
Also rejected.
Also rejected. Cash Caravan. Jaime and Bronn are driving the caravan of gold into King's Landing, and they stop and they pick up random small folk in the world, and they invite them in. And you're in the Cash Caravan. They have to answer a bunch of basic questions about Westerosi culture and religion and history, and they're all illiterate and uneducated, and they all fail. And Jaime and Bronn throw them out of the Cash Caravan. And it was rejected by HBO. Turns out you need basic literacy to make a game show like that work.
Next up is Maester MD, which is the House spinoff with... I think we're going to go with Qyburn, even though he's not technically a maester, but he seems to have the most promise. He's the most house-like of all of the people in Game of Thrones, I think.
I think it's like a Dr. Oz, but it's two shows. You got Qyburn and you got Pycelle.
Okay.
And, like, you call in and you got, like, you know, hey, I've got an open wound and I might have got some, like, cow shit in it. And Master Pycelle's like, well, you need to make a poultice of the mashed root of... And then Qyburn
says, burn it with wildfire.
Yeah, Qyburn's like, I must open your chest and replace your heart with a three-eyed crow. And then the caller thanks them for their time. You know, they share moon tea recipes. Like, you know, it's going to be, yeah, a call-in medical show, and it'll be as efficacious as every other call-in medical show. Consult your local maester.
Also rejected.
Also rejected by Game of Thrones. What the hell is this one? I don't even remember.
Oh, you've got to know this one.
Unbent, unbroken, unsexed.
Yeah. It's the Unsullied doing something. I don't know.
So this is all.
This is like a fever dream to me. This whole planning session.
This is like a show about all the people who have been unsexed on the show. All the Unsullied, Varys, Theon. And they talk about the challenges of living in the world without genitalia, I guess. You know,
it doesn't seem all that interesting in retrospect.
No. It had the title. The title was good. It's very problematic. It's probably insulting to lots of different people. Maybe that was best left on the cutting room floor.
One up, Jaehaerys.
Yeah. Good. So the best king of Westeros. So HBO wants to get a lot. You know, obviously Game of Thrones is the biggest thing ever. They want as many seasons as they can get. So we pitched them the reign of the wise King Jaehaerys. 50 years of unbridled peace and prosperity and wealth. And it's 50 seasons. And nothing exciting ever happens. But everyone has a great time. Education is increased. There's no war. New building and technologies, and there's plenty of food, and you know, there's all kinds of political reforms that make things easier for the small folks, and it's just boring as shit. But there's 50 seasons of it, and
it's about contrast, really.
And every year it's going to be cliffhanger whether the king's going to go mad. Spoiler alert, he never does. And it's always sunny in Westeros, except for it's actually a wholesome show.
And finally, what is my favorite is a show called The Winds of Whenever. And it's going to be a documentary behind the scenes thing following George Martin as he gallivants around the world, not writing the books. He's going to go to baseball games. He's going to write other books. He's going to talk about writing The Winds of Winter and promise that it's going to be out very soon.
We're going to watch him like on Sunday mornings in the fall, sit down at his typewriter, and then, the Giants are on. Got to go watch football. And then it's like, I watched the morning game. Might as well watch the afternoon game. And almost time for Sunday night football. And he never writes The Winds of Winter.
This I actually don't think was rejected by HBO.
Yeah, no, they're going with that one.
I think it was picked up.
That one's actually happening. So that's one of the things we promised. We're going to write a George is never going to finish these goddamn books panel. An audience support group. Jim, is he ever going to finish these books?
Of course not. No.
Like,
what incentive does he have at this point?
And it's not that he's not writing. He's just writing everything but. Like, he's doing this wild card stuff. He's doing this Fire and Blood. Like, I don't know if everybody was clamoring for it, but you're going to get a complete history of all the Targaryen dynasty. That's super cool. Someone suggested, it's been suggested many times on our podcast when we talk about it, that maybe George has written all the books and he's just waiting for the show to be over to publish it, which I feel is dumb.
I have a question. Why?
I don't know. But I'm starting to come around. So it is perplexing that this is now the largest gap we've ever had between any of the books. And we also know that, this is me blowing sunshine up all y'all's asses, but I'm starting to actually believe this. George is a gardener, and he's not an architect, which means he has a kind of a goal he's trying to get to, but he like creates these characters and he waters them and he adds some sunshine and they start growing in interesting directions, which impacts the paths of the other characters. He has to go back and rewrite that. And as these books continue, they've exploded out, and now they have to bring them back in. And I think a guy like that would be loath to release A Winds of Winter not having the Dream of Spring, because what happens if he has a garden grow in the Dream of Spring and it's impossible because he's already released the Winds of Winter? Now, my standard comment on that has always been, why the hell would Harper Collins or whoever, I can't remember his exact publisher, why would they ever go along with that? And I'm starting to think that, like, maybe just George is that powerful. Like, if he's like, look, I don't have to write another book. I'm going to sit on them. I'm already super rich, and I don't care. But if you agree to let me finish these two books at my own pace, and then when they're both done, you can release them, like, a year apart or whatever, like, does that seem plausible? Does it seem more plausible than he's just sitting? Like in 2014, he was 3-4 months away from being done. In 2015, he was 3 or 4 months away from being done. And then in 2016, he just stopped giving updates. Like, that's weird. How can you be 3 or 4 months away from being done with something 4 years ago? Like, what is this? Half-Life 3? I don't get it. Oh, wow, that's the one that really gets the Game of Thrones people riled up. It's like, show of hands, is that plausible? That George is sitting, that he's, I'm not saying he's finished them all, but like, okay, I got some, how many people think we're going to get Winds of Winter? Oh, that's kind of depressing. How many people think we're going to get a Dream of Spring? Oh, that's really depressing.
I think those go hand in hand.
How many think we'll get, like, two more books we don't know about because it's going to take George that long to finish the thing? Okay. All right. That's fair. I don't know. He's like,
I just don't see it happening. He doesn't seem like he needs to write these books. And he feels compelled to write, just not these two books. And I don't. It doesn't seem like he's going to come back around to them. At least not in time to keep Brandon Sanderson off his back.
I mean, I get the impulse of being afraid to let people down. I mean, I was sobbing hysterically backstage, and it was just a threat of a lawsuit that got me out here to do this podcast. So I get being reluctant to come out here and disappoint people, but, like, man, I don't know. It's just such a weird thing. And the other thing is, season seven. So, like, last time we were at Con of Thrones, we were right before season seven, and, you know, people were making predictions. There's already a lot of spoilers out at the time, and I thought season seven went pretty good. There's some rocky places in the middle. Not sure about the whole dragging a white back to King's Landing plan, but I felt like it began well and ended well. And it sets up season eight pretty good. But there's only 6 more episodes, and it just seems like there's so much plot left to resolve. I need George to come in and tell me, like, the full play-by-play. I'm going to get the highlights. I'm going to get the cliff notes.
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% right on that. I just don't think there's going to be a play-by-play.
All right, well, that's a bummer.
Maybe I'm a pessimist, but I just don't see it happening.
Shall we move on to the next segment?
Yes, the next segment is the aforementioned Lord of Lightning Round.
So this
may be a good time to talk about a person who is writing a book, an important book.
I've been kind of hinting at this here and there, but, like, I've been for the last 6 months working on a book with a guy whose name is Anthony LaDon, who's a professor of theology out of Dayton. And we're doing a look into the religions of Westeros and their real-life counterparts, because Anthony is he's an expert on comparative religion, ancient religions, religions all over the world. And as several panels here have talked about, a lot of the religions in Westeros are based on, like, real-life analogs. And if we understand that, we can kind of understand, like, deeper themes and connections to the characters and how they view the world. But it's also, turns out, kind of useful for theory crafting. So it's going to be kind of like a semi-scholarly look at the religions, but also with a lot of fun tongue-in-cheek stuff and a lot of fun fan theory stuff. And there's going to be a Kickstarter in about 2 weeks where we're going to try to raise money to get an editor and a typesetter and a cover artist and all that. If you're interested in that, check it out. You go to baldmove.com or follow us on Facebook or Twitter to see when it comes out. And he decided it'd be a good idea to just do a pop quiz on all the religions in Westeros to see if I could hang.
Yeah, we're going to test your knowledge here so we know whether or not to buy your book.
Well, if I suck really bad, I mean, this seems like this is high
this
risk.
This is setting you up for failure.
High
absolutely.
Risk, low reward. You know, people are going to buy the book or not, but if I completely fall on my face, probably not.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I think you'll do pretty well at these. But the Lord of Lightning round concept is Aaron has 30 seconds to... I'm going to name a religion. He has 30 seconds to describe that religion to you, to the audience members here.
Can I pass?
You cannot pass. And
it's not $30,000 pyramid?
In fact, if you don't know, if you don't know anything about the religion at all, I prefer you make something up.
Okay.
And try and fool them.
Okay.
Okay?
I've not seen this list. He came up with this in secret, so here we go.
And I've got a timer here.
You have a timer? All right.
I'm going to try and put it up to my mic so we can hear the failure. Okay, we're starting off with an easy one, a softball, R'hllor.
So that is the religion around the Lord of Light. It's all about the purifying power of flame. It's based on an ancient religion called Zoroastrianism, which is one of the first dual religions where they have a co-equal good god and an evil god, and they are locked in a cosmic struggle. And the interesting thing about
10 seconds.
The interesting thing about R'hllor is that it seems like he's the good god, but he's locked into war with this great other who's the opposite of him, and his magic is all about shadow and darkness and cold, and the Lord of Light is all about fire and warmth.
Time's up.
Okay.
Time's up. You got everything you need out of that.
Okay.
Okay, let's bring on the next one. The Faith of the Seven.
That's another prominent religion in Westeros, largely based on concepts in embodying the Roman Catholic Church, the Catholicism. It says that there's one God that is reflected in seven aspects: the Father, the Smith, the Warrior, the Maiden, the Mother, the Crone, and the Stranger. And all of those things are co-equal, and they all embody like main qualities, but they're all connected to each other through the star, so that these qualities are also tempered by each other. It's one of the interesting...
Time's up. Oh. I'm going to enjoy this way too much.
I don't even need a phone.
Here we're pitching you softballs to start off with.
Okay.
How about the old gods?
So that's a religion that was native to Westeros. It's roughly analogous to the animism religions that you see in like the First Nations and Native Americans, where they don't have like a central god, but they worship trees and rivers and the land. And in fact, the children of the forest, who are the main adherents of that and converted the first men, their language was described as like the sound of babbling brooks and the rustling of wind through trees. And it's in comparison to like the Faith of the Seven, it's an active...
Oh, time's up.
Shit.
Too bad.
All right. 30 seconds is killing me, man.
Yeah, it's
need
not
30
much
minutes.
Time. You need at least one chapter for each religion, I would think. Okay, let's go.
Oh,
with...
shit, I should have thought of that.
Oh, no.
Just wrote the last chapter at the hotel room 2 nights ago, but like, damn. Ah.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
We're getting a little trickier,
okay.
I think. The many-faced god.
So that is the faceless men's realization that there is one god, and that god is death. And they see all the other great religions of Westeros and Essos all pay homage to this, the stranger or the other, and they see that's the universal thing. All men die, and they see that the one thing that unifies all these religions is that that's the inevitability of death. And a death is not something to be feared. It's something that's a mercy. It's when you've been on a long travel on a dusty trail.
Real unfortunate there. That's a really interesting religion. I wish we had more time. Let's go a little bit harder now. Have you heard of the horse god?
Are you referring to the great stallion of the Dothraki? I'm going to assume you are. So the Dothraki are interesting because they're analogous to like Mongol culture, the tribesmen of the steppes in Central Asia. And their whole thing is they believe in the great stallion. He's very mighty, but he's like the Mongols who worship the mountains. That's a very localized religion, and they don't believe that anyone that's not from the mountains should worship their gods. So they recognize like the other peoples have gods and they're powerful, maybe not as powerful as the great stallion since they're conquering and enslaved them. But they do recognize
So many seconds missed. Mm. So many seconds left to describe them. okay, let's go to the next one. Mother Rhoyne.
So that is a god that's worshipped by the Rhoynar, and it's typified by the Rhoynar River. And that's roughly analogous to the Nile River in Egypt.
The river gives them the life and makes their fields fertile. There's also these gigantic turtles that live within them called the Old Men of the River, and they're supposed to be the consort of Mother Roine. Don't know a lot about that one.
All right, well, you made it in under the buzzer.
Okay.
But I buzzed you anyway. Next up, here's another pretty easy one, although it's a lot to describe, the Drowned God.
The Drowned God is the god worshipped by the Iron Islanders, and he is he's also associated with like death and mystery and coldness. People the Ironborn feel like that they can be drowned and die and be reborn, and then they never have to die again. It's like this like literal baptism, and if you survive it, then you know you've been blessed by the Drowned God. All of their prophets and their priests have to like Theon gets baptized like by pouring sprinkled the water over him, but
okay. let me ask you this: has a king of the Iron Islands or queen of the Iron Islands, as it may be, ever not died? As their prophecies, I mean,
have they ever not come back?
No, have they ever not died? Like come back and then not died.
There is one that happened around one of the Greyjoy rebellions where he raised himself and said he was a literal like manifestation of the Drowned God. And
where is he? Is he on Gendry's boat?
Well, so he did get he did like literally march off to sea and not come back. But there's evidence that maybe he is coming back. I don't know.
Okay.
That's
interesting.
It's a tough one.
All right, we're going with another one that I hadn't heard of, because I'm not a book reader. The Lazarene.
So the Lazarene is from the tribe that Miri Mazdur, the Magi, came from. They worship a god called the Great Shepherd. It's very analogous to like the desert sheep herding tribes, like the Jewish faith came from. The great Abrahamic religions came from. It's a monotheist god that recognizes the goodness of all men. The great shepherd loves us all of his lambs the same. They have great esteem for healers because that's something that promotes life, and their healers give their skills.
Great shepherd loves us all, but hates that timer. Next up, Merlin King.
So that's a religion formed around the worship of Varys, who, if you do a close reading of the Song of Ice and Fire, you find out he actually is a Merling. The reason he wears these long flowing robes and never shows his feet is because he's got flippers. He's described as being like smooth and hairless because he's actually half fish. He doesn't have male or female parts because he's got that weird fish slit that could go either way.
I kind of want to let this one keep running.
I did a whole podcast on, if you go in the spoiler archive, I did a whole like 15-minute section on the Merlin King there.
All right, and the final one, which sounds more Westworld to me than Game of Thrones, the Pattern. Wikipedia, folks.
This is a religion formed around the Loomsters of Trithalon, and
he's right.
They're one of the free cities you've never heard of. That's really far, really far east. It's like east of Essos. It's like the land beyond, and they worship the loom. It's like Wanted. Have you seen Wanted, where it goes back and forth? It spits out a name, and they have to kill those people. It's that. It's George is worshiping Wanted. He really likes Angelina Jolie. He really likes Professor X. And that's
Damn.
The religion.
Yeah, that does
what the
accurate.
Hell is that? You made that one up.
No, I swear, Wikipedia made this
Has
up.
Has anyone heard of the
did.
Pattern?
The
okay,
pattern,
I don't feel too bad about
it's
that.
It's got to be this like crazy, obscure World of Ice and Fire one paragraph thing.
Yeah. I'm going to Jim made it up. He likes to troll people.
That's it. We still have about 20 minutes left. I'm hoping people will queue.
I got another topic. If you guys have any questions, or if you want to, you know, get a comment onto the podcast, step up to the mic. Don't be shy. Let's talk. Introduce another topic of what do we think? It's a long ways off, but what do we? And we are unspoiled. We have not seen any. I don't think there are any leaks at this point, but we haven't seen any. If there are any predictions for season 8,
I have the mother of all predictions. I think Cersei is going to win. I think, you can boo me. All 60,000 of you. I feel like she's got the right strategy in this war, and Jon and Daenerys are going to be busy fighting the Night King, and Cersei's going to come in and mop them up. That's a very Game of Thrones ending.
Okay. I'm still repping the... I think either Jon or Dany will survive. I don't think they both will. And I think they're going to try to pay whoever's a survivor, pay homage to this concept of Dany breaking the wheel by forming, again, not like a strict, like Western style democracy, but there's going to be some sort of limitation on the powers of the Iron Throne. There's lots of reasons I think this, because the war that's bled the country, and the war that's coming is, you know, eliminating a lot of the small folk. So the ones, you know, you still need people to tend the flocks, you need still people to pound your armor, and you need people to, you know, tan your hides and all that kind of stuff. So, like, those people are going to be a lot more powerful. They're going to be able to demand better working conditions and money, and it's going to lead to a rise in, like, a merchant class, and the lords that are left, like, it's going to be very tempting for them just to, like break off into the Seven Kingdoms. So to continue to unite the whole country, they're going to have to, like, make concessions to keep them in line. So it's, I don't know. I know one of the things that George always said was frustrating about Lord of the Rings is after the evil was defeated, you know, King Aragorn ruled and that was that. And a return to the status quo of someone being on the Iron Throne that's quote-unquote good, when if you look through the Targaryen dynasty, it's essentially good king, bad king, good king, meh king, terrible king, subtitled The Cruel. Okay, king, like it's a crapshoot, and you're not breaking the wheel by putting a good king or queen on there that could give birth to some nightmare. So that's my point. Let's hear the audience. Yellow shirt.
So, question: which character do you think is least likely to die in season 8? Because I think that kind of might lead to how it's all going to end. I mean, who's going to be ruling?
The least likely to die.
Who can you not envision? You know.
That's a tough one because, like, I think Dany or Jon could die. Because
I think I have the answer, but I don't know what you all think.
Because, like, maybe Sansa.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That's what I'm thinking.
Because I easily see Arya dying, doing something foolish, heroic, or stupid, but Sansa has been established as a survivor, and they're also establishing her as a capable leader that the North is going to need. And, like, if she's dead, and, like, Jon, you know, like, who does that leave in the North? I'd say Sansa. What do you think?
That was my guess too. Now extrapolating that, what do you think that would mean as far as the show? And when it's over, if Sansa's alive, is that
all men must die and Sansa's a woman. So she's exempt through a loophole.
No, I mean she would be the Queen of Winterfell, right? I mean I think that would be
She'd be the Lord. Like that's the thing.
Because I think Jon or Dany is going to be the overall ruler.
Okay.
Most likely Dany, in my opinion. But,
okay.
Yeah. That's the other thing about the demographication of Westeros is that there's so many people dead, so many great houses that have been extinct, so many men in particular that have died in these wars, that I think it'll lead to an inevitable uptick in rights for inheritance for, like, both women and bastards, because someone's going to have to hold these lands and titles, and you're going to have people that maybe would be unattractive just a few years ago, like Theon. Like, no Ironborn would take him as a king or a leader, but, you know, he's going to prove himself in a great war, and there's going to be a shortage of, like, quote-unquote capable men, and there's going to leave cracks for people like Sansa and Theon and these others to attain very powerful positions that they otherwise wouldn't have. And that's going to have, you know, obviously you let these people, you give these people representation within the government, that's just going to have a transformative effect on Westeros.
Awesome. Thank you. Jim, I love the shoes, by the way.
Oh, thanks. They're new.
Hi, I'm Maddie.
Hi.
Hi. So, you know, Con Snow looks like exactly like Kit?
You know, it looks exactly like Kit?
Con Snow.
Oh, yeah.
Back to the con side. Who do you think, Aaron, who do you think Jim looks most like? And Jim, who do you think Aaron looks most like?
I know my answer right off the bat, and he's going to be dressed as him at 6 p.m. tonight. Okay. Roose Bolton.
Like a Gendry that hasn't spent 5 years rowing?
Fuck you. That's fair. Yeah.
Jamie Lannister.
I take that as a compliment, actually.
He's a very pretty man. Yeah. Just row for 5 years. Come on, you can do it. I believe you. I believe in you.
I am Jamie of House Lannister, and I'm come to ask, where do you think I play in all of this? Where do I end up?
You're probably dead, bro.
My heart says, breaking my heart. My heart says you marry Brienne.
Love it. Love it.
But you're going to have to kill Tormund first.
That's true. That's true. And it's, you'll break Tormund's heart. And he's got a big heart and an even bigger beard. You got a rough shake. Like, everyone says you're a villain and you did do some bad things, but you seem like a pretty good kid until you had to kill the Mad King. And honestly, that's Luke Skywalker blown up the Death Star. And what if Luke Skywalker got, mocked and pilloried and disrespected for that heroic instead of getting the medal ceremony?
So what if he was Chewy?
So what if he's Chewy? Yeah. Is he able to maintain the Jedi ideals under those circumstances? So I feel like you're ripe for a comeback. Yeah, you did some attempted child killing. You strangled your cousin to death, but that's grading on a Westeros curve. That's not bad. That seemed bad until we met Ramsay Bolton. That seemed bad until we met Euron Greyjoy. So I feel like, yeah, you got a bright season 8 future unless you die.
The things I do for love.
That's awesome. I want to do some thought experiment, like Schrodinger's cat right here. Okay, so at some point. Let's say 1992, George R. R. Martin starts writing these books, okay? And in his mind, he's got an ending. And let's just say the ending that we're going to see is the ending he came up with sometime between 92 and, let's say, 2000, okay? And then the Double D's come to him, and they ask him these questions, and that's when he tells them about Hodor and all these different things. So there is an ending, but it's like Schrodinger's cat, because we don't know what the ending is going to be, but they both know what it's going to... Eventually, it's going to materialize into one ending. And let's just say... Jim, you said you think Daenerys is going to live. Jon's going to die. Let's just say Daenerys ends up on the throne. Super vanilla ending, just like that, okay? Do you think George, in his mind, there was an image that was Jon Snow. There was an image that was Ned Stark. There was an image that was Jaime Lannister. And then Kit Harington showed up, and then Sean Bean showed up. And then now these images are now, before they were pure, and now they are sort of, I don't want to say polluted, but in his mind, they're not pure anymore. Now he cannot write Jon Snow without thinking of Kit Harington. And do you think that that's part of what's causing this delay? Because I have a feeling that if the show never came out, we'd already have Winds of Winter. We'd already have A Dream of Spring. Because I think what's happened is that creative juice he had, that ending that he already... Because we come up with these really complex endings where, like, Bronn ends up on the Iron Throne, right? But I don't think in 92, when he first came up with this, Bronn was going to sit on the Iron Throne. I think it was a pretty basic, generic ending where everybody was kind of happy with what happened, and we've just, the internet, Twitter didn't exist, YouTube didn't exist, and we have just overthought this to a massive extent. But you got to remember, there's this dude in Santa Fe, or there's a dude in New Mexico, and he's just sitting there, and he came up with an ending, and it's been there this whole time. And what do you think about that? What do you think about the show has actually maybe made it just impossible, where to the point where maybe he's second-guessing himself?
So you think he... kind of already wrote the books and the outline that he gave I know
the outline's done.
In his mind, like, he's already written the books because he gave the outline to the people who are going to make the thing for
him. I don't think he's written the books. I think there is this is the problem I have, is, right, we talk about a gardener, right? So we've created chaos, and then eventually we have to have the opposite of chaos, and then we have an ending that collate, that solves all the problems, and we have the opposite where everything comes together, right? The opposite of entropy. So now, here we are. He knows what the ending's going to be, right? Something that the creators of Lost never figured out. They never came up with a real ending. Right here, we have an ending. There must be an end. And in his mind, he knows what that is. And in his mind, he told that to the Double D's, whatever that ending is. And I think they're coming up with this, like, man, we can't keep doing this anymore. 6 more episodes and we're fucking done with this. But he can't do that. And I think, do you think that that's the part of the problem why he can't finish these books?
So the first thought when you were talking about this is whether he sees, like, Kit and all these various people, and I think, like, when I approach a work and I read the books first, I have a very clear idea what those characters look like. And then if I see like a movie adaptation later, they like kind of like share that space, but I still have like who I think this person looks like. Whereas if I watch the television or the film series or the film series first and then go back and read the books, well, they just look like the people that looked on the film. And I feel like Martin would be like a super version of that. Like these are the characters he created. And like I don't think he sees Peter Dinklage when he thinks of Tyrion, because Peter Dinklage doesn't look anything like the book Tyrion. Right. I think he's got a very clear idea of that. But I mean, I can't help but wonder, as the Reddits and the Wikis of Ice and Fire and the Citadel.orgs of the world have just pieced together and pulled all these secrets and had so much time and effort, like, you know, 6-7 years between books to just obsess and analyze, that I think there is a version of the ending that's already out there, and I think that really bothers him. And I would find it very easy to believe that he has done some defensive rewrites to try to, like, oh, they figured this out, I need to make something even more badass and awesome. And also, I think what the TV show, what its biggest effect might be is just it's, like, taken the winds out of his winter. It's taken the wind out of his sails that, like, his story is going to be told by two other people that they kind of seem like they're getting a strained working relationship. And also, like, if you listen to interviews, like, I feel like that Dan and David are, like, everything about the interviews, it seems like they're, like, kind of done. Like, they've been doing this for a decade, and they're worn out. And, like, that must, as a creator that presumably is passionate about this creation of his, that must be an odd experience.
Well, I think that works both ways. I think Dan and Dave over here, and then George R. R. Martin over here, they have become defensive of each other's creation, right? Because the one thing is, Dan and Dave are, no matter what they do, they're going to get hate from the book community, right? Oh, you just didn't do this right. Arya fell in a shit river and she's fine. Like, they're always going to have this hatred and, oh, we're sick of this. Let's make a TV show about the Confederacy. And then you have George R. R. Martin, who's like, I wouldn't have told the story that way. I wouldn't have burned Shireen. And I think they've all gotten tired of this conflict. I honestly feel like if this show had never come out, which I'm glad it did, because it brought a lot of us to the books, that the book series would have been done by now.
Yeah, and also, it's like the same thing I wondered about, you know, like every time we're talking about The Walking Dead, what the comic book fans think. Like, The Walking Dead at its highest published rate was like 150,000 copies being circulated, and at Walking Dead's highest ratings was 18 million people watching it. So, like, the fans that read the source material are always going to be a much smaller subset. It's like any time in marketing, if you get 10 people to do something and you ask them to do it extra, like, you'll get one person to do it. Or if you start with 100 people and you ask them to, all right, everybody pay $10 to get in this room, now you only got 10. And then, okay, I got you, please, everyone sign up for our newsletter, only one person of that's going to do it. So it's like the books, like, all of us here at the con, I'm not going to say all of us because I know there's a lot of, like, how many people only watch a show? All right, see? But the vast majority of them have done both, because this is the concentration of the people to listen to the podcast, the people to come to conventions usually are the super fans that have done both. But last I saw their estimate of 100 million people in the world watch Game of Thrones either through piracy or streaming online. There's no way even half of that have read the books. Like, I'd be surprised that 10 million people have read the books.
Right.
So, when you say that, like, book readers will be unhappy with the way, like, even if they are and it's universal, like, that'd be a drop in a bucket if they nail season
eight. Okay, maybe not even book readers. Jim, you thought some of the storylines were ridiculous, and you haven't read the books, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean,
The Shit River is a prime example.
Right, of course, yeah.
I wonder if it's a case of him feeling that he's passed his responsibility to tell this part of the story on to the Double D's. Maybe that's why we see him writing around the main focus of the story, you know, with World of Ice and Fire and all that stuff.
Right.
I wonder if he feels like he's kind of passed that to the next person. Pure conjecture. I have no idea. But
the other thing is I read an probably overly hopeful thread on Reddit where they were postulating that George has realized that to properly understand the whole series, that he needs to get this history nailed down, because there's so much stuff that's, like, building on,
right,
like, the Targaryen dynasty, for example. Like, why would you take a break to release that? Well, maybe he's got to get that straight in his head so he knows how, because there's already hints that there's a lot of these things that, you know, if you read some of the crazier theories, there's some hints that, like, the Blood Raven, a three-eyed crow, has shaped a Targaryen dynasty, especially in the last 100 years or so. And if George is going to build on those concepts, he better damn well know the history. And maybe he's just like, hey, I need to build more world. I don't know if I believe that or not.
But while that sounds like a great idea, the thing is he did at some point tell the Double D's an ending, and we are going to see that ending next year.
But he also originally had this to be a trilogy.
Right.
So, like, that's the gardener problem, right? The vines keep growing, the weeds get taller, and at some point you got to whack them down, and that's where he seems to have trouble doing that.
All right, I think we've got to get to the next two questions here.
Yep.
After doing all your research for the religions in Westeros, I just wondered if you were to be put into the, like, Planetos or whatever you want to call it, what religion would you do, and, like, would you be a part of? And what would you do inside that religion? Like, if you were chose to be part of the Drowned God religion, would you be like the damp hair going out baptizing
everybody? I like his name. That's a good name for a high priest of religion.
I thought it was damp hair, by the way, for like the first 3 years I read the book. I didn't realize it said damp hair.
Yeah. As people saying atheos, I just said this on a panel on the Faith of the Seven, like, if I walk outside this con and there's some person conjuring flame and resurrecting the dead, I'm signing up for that religion, right? Because that's evidence that there is a power that I don't understand that I could beseech to maybe live forever. That's pretty cool. Like, my atheism isn't going to get that. So I guess I would go hard after I would sit at the feet of the Blood Raven and want to get plugged in the Weirwood Network to have immortality, or I would want to get with the Lord of the Light so I could be resurrected by a hot fire priestess, hopefully played by my wife, and that sounds pretty good to me. I feel like that's like a lot of religious people think the atheists are atheists just to be like, oh, screw you, God. But like, no, man, if there's a God, I would totally be down for, like, I want to live forever. I don't want to die. Who wants to die? Oh, there's probably some people. And there's people to love you, and you're very important, and we don't want that to happen. But you know what I'm saying? Like, hey, I'm totally. What about you?
2 minute warning. I think that was pointed at you. Yeah. We want to get some more questions in real quick.
See, Jim would die. He's like, screw it. Yeah, I'm not kneeling. I do not kneel.
Drown me, don't bring me back.
I have a cool question about the ending, really fast. It's been briefly mentioned in the books, and even less briefly in this show. What role do you think the Golden Company is going to play? Since there's only 6 episodes, like, how are they going to fit the dead and the wall and the Golden Company and Euron?
Like, how are they going to bring all the different story elements?
Yeah, because Cersei mentioned that Euron went over to go get them. So what role do you think they're going to play? Are they going to be involved with fighting the Night King?
The Braavos army? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. From Essos.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a pivotal role to play. And whether they get burned immediately alive by the dragons or not is up in the air. But they're absolutely coming over. Okay. They have to be.
Yeah, and I think that's like the magic, like, thousand ships of Euron Greyjoy. Like, that's a way that there's a lot more moving parts in the books, but that's a way for the showrunners, like, man, our cupboards are bare. We need armies to continue to do this fight. Oh, yeah, right, there's the Golden Company. We'll bring them over on his thousand ships, and that's going to work out. But I'm sure in the books they'll have a lot more, but that's just essentially shorthand for Cersei's still got some armies to threaten Dany and Jon when they get back, for presumably from the war with the White Walkers. Try to get one more in. So sorry.
I'm much shorter than this mic. I wanted to jump back to when you were talking about kind of a shift in how the government would work in Westeros. I know Martin's based a lot of the story on Western Europe and how their governments kind of went. So in the last season, Tyrion kind of touched on if Dany was to become the queen, that she may not have a successor, and although John might throw that off, I was wondering if you thought it's possible that they might take, like, the British model of having a prime minister and a royal still in the seat.
Yeah, I think that's one of the pressures I'm talking about. Like, that's still something debated whether Dany is Baron, but the fact that Tyrion brought it up, that you need an heir and to have a dynasty, I think is pointing to that there is going to be some kind of... and there's also a lot of proto-democracies in Westeros, like the Night's Watch elect their leaders democratically. There's Volantis has the Triarchs that they elect annually. Dany is from the old Valeria, where they elected from, you know, all the freeholders got a vote and they elected their leadership that way. So I think there's precedent. It'll be some form of very, very prototypical. It might just be like the House of Lords kind of thing, where like the Lords can consent to taxes and who gets to wage war and that kind of thing. It's not going to be like, you know, one man, one vote, every plowboy and milk maiden's going to get a vote. It'll be something kind of like that. So, good questions.
All right.
We are out
everybody.
Of time. We're going to be kicked off the stage. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Really appreciate it. All the great questions.